Bring it back to my place. Winter gets a comic.
Any comic?
Yeah. Hey! I didn't say go!
I'll take your X-Men 1-3-4!
Stranger Things, the original Netflix sci-fi series full of 80s nostalgia, that synthesized music, kids on bikes, Dungeons and Dragons, you heard X-Men mentioned there too. It rocketed to number one digital original series in the first week of its release last month, 44 million views. That's according to numbers from Parrot Analytics, or a company that measures global content demand. So joining us now with more is Ethan Gilsdorf. He's here to talk about why Stranger Things is so popular. He's a pop culture writer, a contributor to WBUR's The Artery, and also to the Boston Globe. And he wrote about nostalgia and the tropes in Stranger Things for Salon. Ethan, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Great to be back.
Okay, so first of all, tell us a little bit about Stranger Things, a little summary of the plot.
Sure. So the story is set in a small fictional town in Indiana in 1983, and the action begins with four boys who are sitting around playing Dungeons and Dragons, and they're about 12, they're preteens, and one of the four of the quartet has a mysterious encounter with a supernatural force. I don't want to give away too much, but that sort of sets into motion a search for what happened to the kid. And the kids are on their own journey to figure out what happened, and there are also our teenagers and adults as well who are trying to figure out what happens.
Okay, so 1983, you said. That's the key fact.
Yes.
There. That's when it's set. Why do you think this show has become so popular? Is it they're, you know, folks of my age, card-carrying Gen Xers maybe, or just feeling nostalgia for the 80s of our youth?
Well, it's a sweet spot for me. I'm a child of the 70s and the 80s. You know, I grew up watching a lot of the movies that this movie references, and came of age at this time. And I feel very much like there's a certain amount of, I think, interest in the 80s or some other series out there, whether it's the Goldbergs or the Americans that are set in the 80s, the new Ghostbusters reboot movie that came out this summer. So there's something in the air. I mean, there's some thoughts as to why that might be the case, but I think there is a whole generation of people who now are making films who grew up on these movies or rediscovered them. And it's part of like the lingua franca of their childhoods and of their world.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit more about that aspect of it, because there's kind of a tipping point between nostalgia and referencing pop culture memories of our youth and maybe exploiting them or beating you over the head with those tropes. Because, for example, in the beginning of the series, the kids in Stranger Things, they play Dungeons and Dragons, as you mentioned, and there's a reference to an opening scene from Spielberg's E.T. So first of all, let's listen to the original scene in E.T. where we have Steve, Mike, and Greg playing Dungeons and Dragons.
Five.
Oh, great.
So you got an arrow right in your chest and you're out 10 melee.
Oh, no.
Don't worry about it, Mike. I got resurrection. I'll bring you back.
I'm already one of the undead, Greg. I can still throw death spells, huh, Steve?
So that's from E.T., from Steven Spielberg's E.T. Now, there's a similar scene in Stranger Things where four preteen boys, Will, Mike, and Dustin and Lucas, are getting excited about their game.
Will, your action!
I don't know!
Fireball him!
They'd have to roll a 13 or higher!
Too risky!
Fireball him!
Cast protection!
The Demogorgon is tired of your silly human bickering! It stops towards you!
So do you think that's too much of sort of echoing memories that we have from 80s pop culture, or is Dungeons and Dragons really serving the purpose here?
Well, I think in this case it does. I mean, and there's definitely a danger of this whole show sort of being a pointless or sort of soulless knockoff of a lot of Spielberg movies or this pointless nostalgia trip. But I feel like, you know, there's an element in which that serves as a way for us to establish who these four boys are. And also, in a way, the D&D setting or the session that they have at the beginning of that first episode sort of sets everything into motion and provides these kids with a sort of background to their character. We know that these kids are smart, they're introverted, sure, they're nerdy and they're being bullied, but the fact that they have this sort of secret knowledge of magic and how things might work outside of the view of adults sort of sets them onto their quest. I mean, they can sort of understand the world in ways that maybe adults can't, which is, of course, a classic trope from Spielberg and some of these other movies from the 80s, which is the kids are kind of running around on their bicycles with flashlights, investigating things. The Goonies is another good example.
Yeah.
And the adults are kind of clueless or inept. And I think that there's what's nice about the Stranger Things is it doesn't simply turned the whole series into an exploration of this, but there's an element in which this is kind of a way to set the motion, set the plot in motion, but the series goes on and does much more interesting things with that idea than simply, you know, a sort of quaint little story of boys.
You know, once you mentioned the Goonies, all of a sudden I had in my mind images of a ghost pirate ship setting sail
yes.
off into the distance in the waters of the Pacific Northwest. Because, I mean, it just goes to show like how deeply ingrained some of these movies and images and stories are from those of us who spent our formative years in the 80s. But in terms of the directors of Stranger Things, the Netflix series, brothers Matt and Ross Duffer, they were born in 1984.
That's right, yeah.
So these aren't necessarily their own memories. They're even, they're a little too young.
They're sort of memories of memories. I mean, their parents would be my age. I'm just about, you know, to turn 50. These guys, I originally assumed they were my age, and it turns out they were born a year after the story of Stranger Things even takes place. You know, they were born in 1984, so they're millennials.
Yeah. So totally what do you think the attraction is for them to have set the story at this time period?
Well, I think there's a... I can't pretend to speak for all millennials because I'm not one, but it seems to me that there is an age that maybe some younger people are you know, hankering for, which is a pre-digital age, before helicopter parenting, before digital technology, where it was rotary phones and walkie-talkies and kids who kind of had a lot of free-range, you know, parenting thrown at them. You could just go out the door and be gone for hours.
Ride your bike
and
into the starlight.
Get into trouble.
Yeah.
And I think that's very, very appealing. I mean, in the age of Pokemon Go, where you're capturing imaginary monsters, in this show, they are trying to capture real ones.
Well, Ethan Gilsdorf is a contributor to WBUR's The Artery, and he's also a contributor to the Boston Globe, amongst others. He's author of the book Fantasy Freaks and Gaming Geeks, An Epic Quest for Reality Among Role Players, Online Gamers, and Other Dwellers of Imaginary Realms. You can find a link to Ethan's salon piece on Stranger Things at our website, radioboston.org. Ethan, thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks for having me, Magna.
And we're going to go out on the theme song from Stranger Things, composed by Kyle Dixon and Michael Stein. And that's it for today. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.